This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Recently, a close friend of mine experienced an unexpected loss. Watching their family struggle emotionally and financially made me stop and think seriously about my own family's future. As the primary provider, I know how important it is to make sure that if anything ever happened to me, my family would still be able to manage. So I realized that without life insurance, my family would be left with overwhelming financial burdens. I looked into coverage before, but the process always felt complicated, got endless forms, phone calls, and medical exams, made everything take weeks. So that's why Ethos stood out to me. Their process is simple and 100% online. There's no medical exam required, just a few health questions, and you get a quote in as little as 10 minutes. In many cases, you can even receive same-day coverage without ever leaving your house. Ethos offers up to $3 million in coverage, with some policies starting as low as $2 a day, billed monthly. It's a trustworthy company that's changing the way people think about life insurance. So protect your family's financial future with life insurance from Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/Brian. That's ethos.com/Brian. Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, getting closer to Thanksgiving. Many of you will be off. A lot of you working and traveling today, and that's great. Hope you're listening to the show. Rich Lowry at the bottom of the hour, and he is from the National Review. He's going to talk about tariffs and also the GOP. Cannot punt on healthcare. I thoroughly agree. And then you have Bret Baier standing by with his hit book to rescue the American spirit, Teddy Roosevelt and the birth of a superpower, and a lot of moving parts. If you think for a second we're going to be going through old news or holiday news, there is just too much going on, too much substance. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
My oath and every oath every member of the military took is loyalty to the Constitution. Not to a person.
Mark Kelly, you're in trouble. Treason treatment for the Democratic Five of the FBI as the FBI zeroes in on their motive behind the anti-Trump message to the military. We also look at the Dems' deranged, disturbing meltdowns as they try for a midterm victory.
Number two.
So on the one hand, you've got some improvement in affordability. On the other hand, you've got a jobs picture that's just a little bit murky. The jobs numbers the past few months have been weak.
Yep, that is Brian Brenberg of FBN. Affordability, the key to Trump's term to success. We look at the number and what it would take to raise consumer confidence in a media environment where anti-Trump rhetoric has blasted out from dusk to dawn.
Number one.
Russia has not made one concession in all of these negotiations. Not one. And why is that? Because he has always believed time is on his side.
And that's got to change. General Jack Keane is 100% right. Ball's in Russia's court as a major progress is made with Ukraine, the EU, us, and allies. But is Steve Witkoff the best to deal with Vladimir Putin? He's in Russia now. I mean, this revelation that comes up that Steve Witkoff's on the phone coaching Russia how to deal with Trump and urging Vladimir Putin to get on the phone with Trump before the Zelensky meeting, at which time he convinces Trump not to sell the Tomahawks or give the Tomahawks to Ukraine. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Now, Trump says he's not upset by that, and I'll play that in a second, but I do want to bring in Bret Baier. Bret's chief political anchor of Fox News, and his book is out now, To Rescue the American Spirit. Brett, what about that revelation? This recording's out there. It's not a rumor.
Yeah, I think it's, you got to see the context of it, of course. But, the president has pushed it off as standard negotiation, trying to get to a deal. He would do the same thing with Ukraine. I think, there's a little bit more there. And coaching Russia how to talk to President Trump, I think raises alarm bells. And there's Representative Fitzpatrick and others who've come out and said this is an issue. He's a real estate developer who does deals and figures out how to get to yes. That's what the president is saying about him. He trusts him. He has his ear. That's his biggest asset. And I just don't know, you know, if this puts it in the right light, considering where we are with this negotiation.
I know. It's just the thing is, we're not even talking about both sides, because you're talking about a side. Russia really, as you heard General Keane, has not really shown that they're looking to give it anywhere. So the 28-page plan, for some reason, it got published. Marco Rubio was not dealt in on that. He came in to save it. They knock it down to 19, and it seems to be much more positive. Here's Donald Trump on the back and forth with Steve Witkoff. Cut one.
He's going to sell Ukraine to Russia. That's what he's. That's what a deal maker does. I haven't heard it, but I heard it was standard negotiation. And I would imagine he's saying the same thing to Ukraine, because each party has to give and take.
So that's the whole thing. I mean, there's some points that we could go over. The Donbass, are they really going to give up land they have not won yet? Are they actually going to do a land swap on that? And in terms of security guarantees, you know, France and England, just two countries, have said we would put troops on the ground. But Russia says, I don't want any troops on the ground, right? In Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So the security guarantee, like, what does that look like? I think there's, you know, real questions. While all sides say they're optimistic, we just don't know how big the separation is on the points of contention. If it's security guarantees and troops, and, you know, you're talking about big things. If it's something smaller, then it's possible. I don't think they're going to ever give up land that Russia has not taken. But I do think that if they got to a point where Russia occupies land it occupies now, that Ukraine, in a tired kind of ready to get the war over with a back end deterrence from the U.S., kind of like an Article 5, but not in NATO, then they do it.
And that's doable if Russia wants to do anything. Here's Sergey Lavrov through an interpreter, cut 10.
We have channels of communication with our American colleagues. They are being used, and we are awaiting their version.
So I think I recognize that translator voice, but we'll have to do it through. I'm going to have to track that down on my own. But it looks like Russia says that I will go with a plan that stays with the principles agreed upon in Alaska. I'm thinking to myself, was anything, you were there, was anything agreed upon in Alaska? Do you know what Lavrov could be referring to?
No. If anything, it was just the early stages of what Russia wanted.
Yeah.
And so there was a blueprint, or, I mean, they didn't even have a press conference.
I remember I was on the air. I was doing Laura's show that night, and I was all set for a response, and instead we got a reporter saying everyone's gone. So we'll see. Hey, I want to bring you to something else, Brett, and that is the Democratic tape that put out there, military and CIA Democrats who decided to tell the military they don't have to obey illegal orders. And as I talked to the president last Friday, he said, when I first saw it, I thought it was a joke. I thought it might have been something AI. And it wasn't. It was people like Mark Kelly and Alyssa Slotnick and others. And now they're all being talked to, but going to be talked to by the FBI. Here's Mark Kelly, cut 25, last night with Jimmy Kimmel.
I've been through a lot more challenging things than this. You know, and I am what I'm worried about is the reaction and what this transmits to the military and the public, which is basically shut up and listen to that guy. And that's not the way our system works. We have loyalty. My oath and every oath every member of the military took is loyalty to the Constitution, not to a person.
Nice try. What are you talking about? You just came out and made a generic statement how you should not obey illegal orders. And now he's worried about people being told to shut up. What was it? I don't even know whose idea this. What would they plan on accomplishing with this? But how do you feel about his explanation?
Look, this is going to benefit Mark Kelly politically. It's going to benefit. He's going to use it, and he'll be, you know, the foil, and it'll get a lot of attention on the left. But when you ask all of these folks, and Martha did a nice job with Congressman Crow. When you ask them, what is the illegal order that you're worried about? They don't have an answer. And so you just put out a video where you can stand up and refuse illegal orders, but then asked, what are they talking about? There's not an explanation. And I think that's a big glaring omission.
I think you're 100% right. And that's just it. I actually, as I mentioned last week, if you just told me that was the conversation on The View, I'd say, no kidding. If you said, well, the squad has a press conference and this is what they say, hey, military, you know, you don't have to obey orders. But when I saw guys like Mark Kelly, Alyssa Slotkin, and Jason Crow, who basically have been informed was mentored by Adam Schiff, so it explains a lot. And you got Maggie Goodlander, Chrissy Houlihan, Chris DeLuzio joining the others. So now this is going to be somewhat of a distraction. But as I saw Spider Marks come out on CNN and said this was totally unnecessary, they didn't need to do it. Listen to this, cut 33.
The fact of the matter is, when Senator Kelly and his colleagues made the comment, the message to me was, we, this collection of folks, we don't trust the military, the uniformed leadership, and we think that they've been taken over by the administration. I would completely disagree with that underlying assessment, which brought them to make these statements.
So, and he said this too, cut 32.
What he and his colleagues did was inappropriate. He could have taken a step back and said, why am I sending this message, which clearly is an insult to our chain of command?
So, look, you know, he's on CNN all the time for a reason. He doesn't go up every day and say Donald Trump walks on water. So he's always a critic of Trump. But that, I think, is a sober view of what they did.
Yeah, listen, there is a system in place. If you have questions, there are JAG officers. If there is something in the chain of command, they're not rolling over. There is a system that's been in place for long, long, long time, decades and decades and decades. And this was simply, it seems, an effort by the six to kind of make a statement and a splash and, you know, get attention. They're clearly doing that. But when they are now are being investigated, and you can argue one way or the other whether that's the right thing or not, but now it's taken to a different level. And, you know, politically, they're just going to use it.
So tell me, as you get ready for Thanksgiving, you doing any more events to rescue the American spirit, Teddy Roosevelt and the birth of a superpower?
I've got a couple more and then kind of wrapping it up for the season. But we'll do something ahead of Christmas. And the Fox Nation special has been really great. Same name, to rescue the American spirit. And it's been picked up a lot. So look forward to running that again.
That is great. So yeah, Brett, it's a great book. Everyone go out and pick it up. And Brett Baer, watch Brett tonight at 6, right, Brett?
You got it.
You
6
got
o'clock.
It. All right. Who can we expect?
There's a lot of surprises.
So you have,
no, I don't know. I actually don't have the list yet.
Do you have you have the panel?
I don't have the panel yet. Oh. Are you available? Hmm.
I'm on the 5. I'll be there to toss to you.
You're on every show.
But I'll be there to toss to you, I promise. And it won't be awkward,
right,
because
good.
I'm not sure Greg's in. Brett, thanks so much.
See ya.
All right. Bottom of the hour, Rich Lowry, you're next. But listen, we have a lot more to discuss, including affordability. I just want to get your take on what's affordable, what's not, and what is spend, where if you could have the best economy, but if 80% or 90% of all the articles written are negative about tariffs and negative about Obamacare and negative about health care, is that going to affect consumer confidence, which is at a 40-year low? Regardless, Republicans, that's the hand you're dealt. How are you going to turn things around and not make the midterms a disaster for your party? Don't move.
From breaking news to big-name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety, built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. 1-866-408-7669. So when it comes to affordability, I'm just going to give you some stats, and you tell me where you stand with all this. If they say, you know, if you look at buying a turkey, slightly up because of the avian flu, but besides that, almost everything else is down. Now the other news. Consumer sentiment is not down. It is not up. It is down. They say it dates back to as low as it's been since the 1987 stock market crash. Economists say the numbers, the data, say it's a B+. The economy is a B+. But the people feel like it's a recession. A lot has to do with things that have nothing to do with any president. Like, for example, AI. AI, there's a fear that it's a bubble. And we remember the dot-com bubble. And they say this is going to happen again like it did in 2000. Now, you could tell people all you want that it's not going to happen. But when NVIDIA drops in the middle of the week and then comes up again a little bit later in the week, they wonder, is this going to be just a few companies that survives? Is this a lot of money pouring into companies like OpenAI that's not going to be profitable and maybe the most successful until 2030? So even if you're not in the market, you wonder about your job because of nobody's fault. But AI is going to take some jobs. And we've seen some of that with some of the major companies, healthy companies. So if the numbers are good, but the sentiment is bad, it is not going to be good for President Trump's party. But if things begin to turn around, nothing's going to stop them, especially oil and gas, and people have something to compare it to. For example, drilling is up. Regulation is down. We know the focus on green and, you know, wind, green technologies and wind is down. They are allowing more drilling. But so far, gas is very affordable, $3.05. But last year was $3.04. So people wonder, where's the big improvement? I think it's coming, just judging by the industry and people that we've had on the air. So U.S. tariff revenue is through the roof. In October of 2024, it was $257 billion. Excuse me, we had a deficit of $257 billion. Our deficit is now $284, which is surprising, but we haven't kicked in with any of the Trump budget yet. The tariff revenue last year was $7.3 billion. Now it is, get this, $31.4 billion. So the $2,000 that could come out, they could do that in reconciliation. But overall, it's good for people to get the $2,000, but it's better for the economy to pay down the debt as much as possible, because that means you have high interest rates, but you pay less interest on less of a total that you owe. New prices will take effect in 2027. They say you'll start feeling a saving 38% to 85% off list prices for drugs for diseases. That'll be good. There'll be reductions of estimated in Medicare payments to about $12 billion. That'll be good. And the president's got all these plans in place to make you get charged less for very popular drugs. And you saw that was happening. I could bore you with what they are. But basically, some of the negotiated drug prices, it well into the double figures. So out-of-pocket healthcare expenses, which really got people down, you know, when you have your copay. On the out-of-pocket expenses, it was $115 on the average, right? Do you know what it is now? On average, $1,514. So whose fault is that? I mean, if you want to say they tried to fix Obamacare, they tried to fix healthcare with Obamacare, that's their plan. So it's their, Trump's job to fix it. What I think, and Rich Lowry will back up, it'll not be good for the Republicans if they just say, not my problem, I'm not touching anything as it does to with Obamacare. It's not your problem, not your fault, Republicans. It's Cigna dropped out, that Aetna dropped out, United has dropped out of the exchanges. So they're not bidding against each other for your business. You know what they're saying? I don't want your business. Not with the Obamacare format and the payments. So they're out. So now you just have the Obamacare option. So the deductibles are extremely high and the cost is high. Not a good combination. But if Trump just sits on the sideline like he might be tempted to do and says, not my problem, that'll be a big mistake. That's why he wanted to do something a couple of days ago. But the Republicans don't want to. So he might have problems with his own staff and his own party. Rich Lowry on this and more. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show. What if your home security could stop a break-in before it even begins? That's not science fiction. That's SimpliSafe. And right now, their early access Black Friday sale is changing how we think about protection. Traditional systems wait until someone's already breaking in. SimpliSafe's Active Guard outdoor protection, powered by AI, detects threats before they reach your door. Real security agents jump in instantly, confronting intruders, letting them know they are on camera and the police are on their way. And if needed, setting off sirens and spotlights. It's proactive protection that stops crime before it happens. And here's the best part. No long-term contracts, no hidden fees, and you can cancel anytime. It's been named Best Home Security System by U.S. News & World Report for 5 years straight. And with a 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try completely risk-free. So, if home safety's been on your mind, this is your moment. Right now, my listeners can take advantage of their biggest sale of the year with this exclusive early access to SimpliSafe's Black Friday sale. And save 60% on any new system by going to simplisafe.com/Brian. There will never be a better time to get real security for your home. Go to simplisafe.com/Brian. Stay protected and stay one step ahead with SimpliSafe.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So on the one hand, you've got some improvement in affordability. On the other hand, you've got a jobs picture that's just a little bit murky. The jobs numbers the past few months have been weak. And so even though the economy's growing pretty well, Brett, 3-4% over the past two quarters, people aren't seeing it in the jobs. That's where the decision becomes really difficult for the Fed. Okay, what do we do about that? Do we keep fighting inflation or do we try to improve the jobs picture? I think the Fed will focus more on jobs coming up in its next meeting.
You'll have to see. We don't even have the numbers really in October, so they did tick up slightly. It's still historically slow. 4.4, 4.5 is low, but not where we were a short time ago. Rich Lowry joins us now, editor of National Review. Rich, you agree with affordability being the key for the midterms, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think price is basically is everything. Everything else we discussed about and obsessed about every day doesn't matter compared to that. Elections are always about big things, and that's the biggest issue.
And you also believe the Republicans can't sit on the sideline when it comes to health care. Why?
Well, they've basically sat on the sidelines for decades now. It hasn't served them very well. It is true that people are going to see premium increases. Now, that's not because Obamacare is working and has been sabotaged. It's because Obamacare is not working and it makes prices higher at the margins. But Republicans need to be able to explain that and present an alternative, even if the alternative is not going to pass. It's just good to have plenty of flags somewhere. Now, the problem is it's really complicated. You're going to upset some people no matter what. What you offer may not be very popular, so they've always kick the can, and we see more kicking the can right here with, you know, this week Trump was supposed to announce something, President Trump, and now it's been put off 2 weeks, so we'll see where they land in a couple of weeks.
So he was supposed to announce he's going to have a two-year subsidy extension, but he was going to get rid of some of the fraud involved and the people who make too much money involved, but the House stopped him in his tracks. I also thought the money originally was going to go to people's health savings accounts instead of the insurance companies, but I don't think that was in the proposal that they were going to put out there. But the Republicans in the House were just determined. They said they were going to blow that up if that was offered.
Yeah, so no Republican has ever voted for these Obamacare subsidies, which were not part of the original plan. They weren't part of Obamacare. They were layered on top during the pandemic by Joe Biden, supposedly on a temporary basis. But all of a sudden, of course, Democrats want it to be permanent. And if Republicans didn't vote for a temporary version, they're going to be really loath to vote for a permanent version. Now, as you say, Trump was supposedly going to offer a temporary version as well. You know, there might be a deal around such a temporary extension, but the get for Republicans, I think, has to be pretty big if they're going to do that.
Absolutely. So the other thing is, how do you feel about the treason, so-called treason tape that's out there that they're being, FDI is investigating all five Democrats that put it out, telling military members you don't have to obey illegal orders?
Yeah, I don't think this is going anywhere. I think this is a ridiculous controversy from beginning to end, and both sides are ridiculous. Members of the military don't need to be reminded that they should disobey lawful orders. They can't point to any Democrats the unlawful orders that they're supposed to be defying now. So that was all theater, and I think this is all theater on the other side. It's not sedition to, you know, share your opinion as a member of Congress about, you know, what the rules are. And these prosecutions will go, or attempted prosecutions will go nowhere. I see it just as harassment, and this is not the way the system is supposed to work.
All right, let's talk about what the message could be on affordability. How do you get prices down? The president suggested some tariffs on certain fruits and beef and to that nature. But as more and more trade deals come in, you got to assume that it's going to be better for the economy, right?
Yeah. So the problem with tariffs is they do raise prices, and the administration implicitly acknowledged that by saying they're going to raise the remove the tariffs on coffee and a bunch of other stuff. And as Bessent said, I think with you, I think pretty sure it was on Fox and Friends, said this will immediately lead to lower prices, which makes you wonder about all the other tariffs. Are they raising prices? And yes, at the margins they are. So more trade deals, more rollbacks would be better there. And I think kind of Bessent has the right idea. You hope your other policies raise wages such that the prices don't bite people the way they are now. And the basic problem here, Brian, politically, is everyone cares about the nominal price of something, right? So if it's just gone up over time, even if the inflation rate's lower, but the price is higher than it was 3 or 4 years ago, everyone feels that and everyone hates it. And that's the political problem.
Kevin Hassett weighed in, director of National Economic Council, Cut 19.
Under Joe Biden, there was more than 20% inflation. One year, that was almost 10%. And if you go back and look at the harm from the inflation under Joe Biden, it reduced the real wage, the real purchasing power for everyday Americans, for ordinary folks, by about $3,000. And since President Trump's come in, we've increased purchasing power by $1,200 already. And as you know, we increased the real purchasing power by about $6,500 in the first term. And so we're on track to fill the hole that Joe Biden dug. And we're doing it really well.
So, I mean, he's out there. He's very competent, can handle any question. But the thing is, it's really not his economy yet. They did have the shutdown that's not going to help. But I think when people start getting their tax returns and these pro-growth policies, including drilling, there could be a lot of really good economic data. I just saw in the New York Times, of all places, they said on data, the administration has a B+. But on messaging, they have a 40-year low because it's the consumer confidence is down to 1987 levels.
Yeah. So if Kevin is right, I assume he is right, and that trend continues, eventually it will tell politically and people will feel it, and this issue will be much better for Republicans. But, you know, that's going to take some time, and the question is whether it happens in time to make a difference in the midterms.
So let's talk about what's happening with the Ukraine-Russia peace talks. It looks like Donald Trump is now sending Steve Witkoff to Russia to finish up conversations that Dan Driscoll, the Secretary of the Army, was having in Abu Dhabi with the Russian officials. And in Geneva is where Ukraine and the EU are meeting, where they say great progress has emerged. What does Rich Lowry think? Where does Rich Lowry think this is heading?
I guess if I had to guess, I would say it's going to fall apart. I think this is one scenario, which is you come out with the initial proposal tilted toward Russia. Then you work the Ukrainians and get the Ukrainians happy with it, and then the Russians won't accept it. And I think that's probably where we're headed. I could be wrong, but I think we're going to be in for some more war before this thing is settled. But I could be wrong. You know, this is not an unreasonable way to go about it. You know, you can't get one side on board and then work the other.
What's your thought about some of the controversy with a phone call being leaked out showing Steve Witkoff coaching the Russians how to deal with Trump?
Yeah, I don't think that's I don't think that's great, but it's the end result matters. And, you know, he worked Gaza as well. And I'm sure there are all sorts of private conversations that wouldn't look great if they were leaked. This is why diplomacy is one of the main things in politics that you want to keep secret. It's not always pretty behind the scenes. And if things are leaked, it's going to upset the other side and maybe blow things up, which is why you want to operate in private. But I think we've talked about this all year long, Brian. I think they need to make it clear to the Russians, you don't go along, we're backing Ukraine to the hilt. It can't be if this deal falls apart, we're going to withdraw support for Ukraine, because that's good for Russia. That creates an incentive for Russia to say no.
Here's General King, cut 12.
Russia has not made, Martha, one concession in all of these negotiations. Not one. And why is that? Because he has always believed time is on his side.
So, and that's what he believes now. But I just wonder how hurting he is, and how economically does he have vulnerabilities? Because we historically have always misjudged Russia.
Yeah, it could be. I kind of think no. Maybe there will be over time. But I think the Russian calculation, in the medium term at least, in the interim, that time is on their side and they're going to grind the Ukrainians down, and the Ukrainians don't have the manpower they do. Russians have an advantage because they get to strike all over Ukraine and destroy their infrastructure. Ukraine can't do that to Russia, and they'll just keep working this thing and kind of grinding it out.
And Venezuela, we have so much firepower there, 15,000 Marines and sailors in the region. We have the CIA basically working to find out the vulnerabilities of Maduro. They could be on the phone talking. And this is very costly just to keep that huge arsenal out there. So what do you, that armada, what are your thoughts?
I don't know. What do you think we're going to do?
Well, here's the president talking about what might happen. Cut 42.
On Lord Venezuela, sir, are you planning to talk to Nicolas Maduro?
I might talk to him. We'll see, but we're discussing that with their, with the different staffs. We might talk about Venezuela.
The U.S. Designated him the leader of this foreign terrorist organization. Why do you want to talk to him if he's the leader?
If we could save lives, if we could do things the easy way, that's fine. And if we have to do it the hard way, that's fine, too.
So what do I think is going to happen? I think we're going to make a move. I hope a conversation with Maduro says, you know, we need you to leave. Like Aristide left Haiti. I think Jimmy Carter screwed that one up, though. Before Maduro said, listen, you're not going to be able to stay. And he's got to let maybe go over with Assad over in Russia. Maybe Iran would like him. I'm not sure they're used to who's living in a mud hut. But we'll see how that goes. But there's plenty of precedent for these guys to leave. Maduro is the problem, but we're not looking to do a Libya situation. There is an elected opposition party that could move right in, but the question is, who's got the loyalty of the military?
Yeah, so we've heard that line before, right? We can do it the easy way, or we can do it the hard way, right? Right before the Iran strike. So if nothing else, that Iran strike really lent more deterrent power to the President Trump. And if you're Maduro, you got to be really worried. And maybe you can leverage him out just with coercive diplomacy. That'd be amazing if he actually do it. A little skeptical. I think we might actually have to hit him. And, you know, we've had bad experience with regime change all around the Middle East. The difference here, as you allude to, is there does seem to be a civil society. There does seem to be an opposition that could take over. So maybe it's a little bit more like these regime change or revolutions you see in some place like Ukraine, imperfect, you know, corrupt country. But still, they toppled a Russian-backed regime, and it wasn't chaos the way it has been in the Middle East. But, if you got that much firepower staring you down, if you're Maduro, you're not sleeping at night, that's for sure.
What about the divide on the right on this? Some people say, hey, why is the president focused so much on Ukraine, the Middle East, and Venezuela? Have you heard that?
Oh, yeah. And, of course, this is Marjorie Taylor Greene's. This is her whole case against President Trump's foreign policy. But he's president of the United States. He's leader of the free world. He's not an isolationist. It's not as though Trump trying to cut a deal in Ukraine is hurting anyone in the United States. It's not as though what he could do against Maduro is hurting anyone in the United States. We have intractable problems here in the United States, social problems with crime and whatnot, immigration. But he's working those things, too. So it's not as though if the president's focused on our obligations abroad, it hurts anyone here in the United States. This is an isolationist critique that I don't buy.
But how strong is it on the right?
I think there are a lot of people with really big platforms who think this way. Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Marjorie Taylor Greene, although she's out, at least for the time being. But I think if there's anything we've learned over the last decade, President Trump runs MAGA, right? he is MAGA. And if he adopts a policy, by and large, there's some exceptions. He couldn't win on the Epstein thing because that his position, just let's keep the files private, just was not going to fly. It was too unpopular with his own side. But by and large, what he says goes. And I think the foreign policy has been generally pretty effective over the last year and is a bragging point for him.
I do, too. And I think it's been very effective. And I'm thrilled that we're taking care of our hemisphere, which usually the MAGA people like, and I think most do. And, Rich, my exit question to you is, I know I saw Laura last night thinks it's going to be a long, tough sledding this year for them to hold on to the midterms. I saw Kevin McCarthy warn that Marjorie Taylor Greene could be a canary in the coal mine. Other people could retire, that there might be some dissatisfaction with communications from the White House. But I also trust your contacts, too, as editor of National Review. Where do you stand on both those issues?
If I had to guess right now, I think Republicans are getting wiped out next year in the midterms, just based on what's happened in the off-year election, just based on steady state, you know, not any big event. The economy is not, you know, appreciably better or worse. I just think their people are coming out in a huge way. And it's just always tough for Republicans to turn out their voters in midterms when President Trump isn't on the ballot. So I think it's looking pretty grim.
The thing I'd like you to factor in is Trump's going to put himself on the ballot. He's actually going to have a convention in the summer. I think he is going to make everybody that ever voted for him come out because he knows the stakes. So I think that might change things a little. So the other thing I would look at is if they put in candidates like they are in the 7th District in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
this woman that's who true. Wants to defund the police, this woman yep. who doesn't like Nashville but wants to represent Nashville, doesn't like country music. I mean, thinks that men and women, there's no difference in the sexes. If you keep putting people like that out there, I think it'll make it an easier sell.
Yeah, it could. I think at the margins, I think it's going to be something of a Democratic wave. If I had to guess right now, you know, but we'll see. We have a years long, very long time.
I wish we had the technology to tape this and play it back, but we don't. So
we'll
see, Rich.
It.
Now you're just going to deny it. All right, Rich, I hope you're wrong. I don't say that often. Thanks so much, Rich Lowry.
Right,
have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
Bye. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete, not in a cage. Not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Despite their size, Secretary Kennedy has formally certified that these are the first ever Maha turkeys. I don't know if I agree with that. These are Maha. In other words, they could be fat, but they're still Maha. They've been fattened on a steady diet of grass, beef, to allow the smoothies and all of the other things that they've been eating for this occasion.
It def sounds like you still plan on eating them.
So I guess Seth Meyers mocked the president. I thought the president was hysterical. I mean, normally the president just goes out there, pardons the turkeys, has a few laughs, and leaves. This guy had a joke after a joke after a joke. And just to me, on the late night comics, you might want to back off on this. He's just having a little bit of fun. The other story in the New York Times I found stunning. And it's in the story. It came out last night, but it's the story at first on the left-hand side in the New York Times. And the story says that Donald Trump is having less and less public appearances, that age is slowing him down in the office, that he doesn't get down to 11:45 or 10:45 on some days. George Bush used to get down at 6:45. And I'm reading all this, and they list all the press conferences he's had over like 1,000 press availabilities. Last night, there was two availabilities, one on the plane, one when he got off the plane. And I'm just am stunned by this. Oh, and he went to the doctor and didn't tell us exactly what they found out, and he's got bruises on his hands. Number one, they already told you a million times about the bruises on his hands. It comes from a lot of handshaking, and he also has a situation where he's on heart medication that causes bruising easily. A lot of older people, he's still, you know, in his 80s, a lot of older people have bruises on their hands. But do you watch him? You don't agree with him, but is anyone able to keep up with him? Do you know, I've know for a fact that he's up at 5 a.m. in the 5 a.m. hour? Do you know that I talked to two separate people in the cabinet at different times? One told me they got a call last week at 1:20 in the morning. The other got a call at 1:40 in the morning. Not to say hi, but that he calls up with ideas. Now, I thought the article was going to be like, Donald Trump should get more sleep. He'll be more efficient. And they point out that he nodded off in the Oval Office. I hate to tell you, I guess you could put me out, put me on notice that I'm getting older, because for the last 20 years on a Friday night, I will often sometimes nod off mid-conversation. It has a lot to do with the fact that I get about 4 hours sleep, try to go 100 miles an hour, and nobody says to me, Brian's losing it. They'll just say, this guy's got to get more sleep. So for you to have that premise, when you ignored President Biden's unavailability for 4 years, his cognitive dysfunction, he couldn't leave a stage, trips on a stage, falls up a stairs. Now, you're just coming off ignoring all that. And now 9 months in, you say he's slowing down. I'm stunned by that. Just so an unnecessary criticism that you have put on the front page of the New York Times again. Please. At one point, can you just pick your spots and then just tell everyone how much you hate Trump? It would just make it easier.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. I am here in New York, but heard around the country and around the world. This hour we're going to be joined by the co-founder and CEO of Extend, a world leader in the battle-proven AI robotics, who just recently secured a multi-million-dollar contract with the Pentagon. We'll talk to Aviv Shapira shortly, and Dr. Kanta Ahmed is here, and we're going to talk to her, a senior fellow of Independent Women's Forum, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and just back from the Middle East, and with a great knowledge of the region, good friend of the show. And before we get to her, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
My oath and every oath every member of the military took is loyalty to the Constitution, not to a person.
Mark Kelly, oath to the Constitution, right. Treason treatment for the Democratic Five as the FBI zeroes in on their motive behind their anti-Trump message. We'll discuss it.
Number two.
So on the one hand, you've got some improvement in affordability. On the other hand, you've got a jobs picture that's just a little bit murky. The jobs numbers the past few months have been weak.
Affordability, the key to Trump term two. We look at the number and what it would take to raise consumer confidence in a media environment where anti-GOP rhetoric is blasted from dusk to dawn.
Number one.
Russia has not made one concession in all of these negotiations. Not one. And why is that? Because he has always believed time is on his side.
Yeah, maybe he's right. Hope he's wrong. Balls in Russia's court as major progress made with Ukraine and the EU in Geneva, Switzerland. Now allies, EU allies are even happy. But is Steve Witkoff the best person to deal with Vladimir Putin? He's going to go over there next week. Why is he waiting until next week? We'll have to see. So we'll discuss that, too. And Russia, of course, their presence in the Middle East severely hurt when you saw Syria's President Assad be overthrown. He's now living in Russia. And now you have this new leader who's basically been targeted by Russia and the government as they barrel bombed most of the Syrians. They still have a presence in Syria. Besides that, they are being drummed out of the Middle East once again. Dr. Ahmed joins us now. Dr. Ahmed, welcome back.
Pleasure to be here.
First off, when you talk about what last week was the MBS week. That's when he comes to America, and he was treated, he had a flyover, Oval Office, press conference, formal dinner, Kennedy and Center investment conference. How was that perceived by Saudi Arabia?
I think it was a huge honor to the Saudis, and I think the Crown Prince said in the Oval Office, the actual triumph is that 9/11 was attempting to sever that relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia that's existed now for almost 80 years to the day. And it is fully back and strong and in good form.
So what do you think about people who were insulted about that here in America? They thought John Stewart, for example, how dare you be so nice to Saudi prince after most of the hijackers are from Saudi Arabia? What would you tell them?
So what I'd say to John is I take care of 9/11 first responders every day in my office. It is much more complex. This was not a state-sponsored attack, 9/11. Osama bin Laden was stripped of his Saudi citizenship in the 1990s by Saudi Arabia, who warned the United States that he was a terrorist. And the damage done to Saudi Arabia because of that event and all of the subsequent events has been enormous. So the Saudi people and the Saudi royal family are devastated at the loss of life of 9/11 first responders, but the relationship must continue, which is good for regional stability.
How do you explain or what the reality as you know it with Khashoggi and his killing?
So that was a disaster. I cannot imagine that was a state-sanctioned dismemberment. Khashoggi has been portrayed as a heroic Washington Post journalist. He was much more likely to be affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood. There's evidence that he was looking to augment digital networks to bring about the fall of the Saudi monarchy. The Saudis saw him as an enemy of the state. Was he destined to die in that manner? That is atrocious. The Saudi crown prince himself has said that is a stain on the kingdom, and they have paid reparations to the family. But that is not the defining event for the relationship between our countries.
Well, I think also not that it's ever right to kill him. You don't kill him, period, especially an American, someone employed by the Washington Post. But he grew up and was a confidant of bin Laden. You know, he was into high school with bin Laden. They were in constant touch.
He was also part of and very welcomed by Saudi intelligence services. So he was a complex character. But it may bring us up to date with the risks that we're facing here in the United States with the Muslim Brotherhood and its affiliations.
So what are your hopes or what should the Americans know about the possibility that we get to a phase two in the Israel-Gaza situation with Hamas and all the other players?
Well, I think we're seeing a realignment in the international community for zero tolerance towards Muslim Brotherhood groups, including Hamas. The entire region is looking forward to the end of this conflict. We've had tremendous alliances with Egypt and Jordan towards Israel to maintain and contain that conflict. I think now comes the part where what are we going to do with the residual armed Hamas fighters that need to be defanged of their weapons and expelled somewhere? As well as creating the International Stabilization Force. I think those are the two sticking points.
Well, how much sympathy do people have for Hamas? Did they have a lot of support in the Middle East? If we put in Middle East forces there for the freedom, the peace forces, and we get the IDF out of Gaza once and for all, and they put together Indonesia, I know, has volunteered, and other troops. Is there a willingness there to crack down on Hamas if they start terrorizing people again?
So I just came back from northern Iraq, Iraqi Kurdistan, where there is no love lost towards Hamas. In fact, I asked them, do you have a Hamas presence or a Muslim Brotherhood presence here? They don't have Hamas actors in northern Kurdistan. They have a Muslim Brotherhood political party, which they said, we like to see it above ground because we don't want them underground. There is animus to what they've done to the region, but there's much stronger pro-Hamas sentiment here in the United States. That's what I'm worried about.
And what about the connection of the Muslim Brotherhood here and how it relates to CARE, which is an acronym, and it's the largest. This group has always been problematic. What are we finding out about them?
So there's a bombshell report released by the NCRI and the Intelligence Advocacy Network. They have discovered not only that CARE is taking in California federal funds, supposedly for Afghan refugees, but funneling it into itself and using it for political lobbying without telling the IRS. They were financing some of the most violent protesters with $1,000 rewards on our campus to do all of that pro-Hamas disruption that we saw in our universities. And now, today, they've revealed that the CARE political action group, which is called CARE Action, is operating without licenses, without registration. It's headquartered in D.C. It doesn't have a business license in D.C. to do that. That means its 22 chapters that it's interacting with and transmitting finances and raising donations may be violating all kinds of state and federal laws.
Wow. So that President Trump, that could be his opening to really crack down on them. He's already moved in that direction, right?
I was thrilled with the executive order that's been announced last week. And he is asking for Americans, just as we've seen with the governor of Texas and Senator Ted Cruz, that they're designating specific chapters as potential foreign terrorist or criminal network groups. This report by NCRI and IAN shows that there's also an affiliation with Turkish aligned, the state of Turkey aligned influences. CARE's fundraising activities are purported to be civil liberties, but they're actually political action. They're occurring in properties that are owned by the Turkish Ministry of Religious Affairs. Their financial digital architecture is rooted through Turkey, not the United States. There are many irregularities that are raising red flags.
So they got to be stopped. I mean, we know they've been a problem. There's been a lot of attention since 9/11, and they tend to be very anti-American. And you said they were huge. They were pumped a lot of money into Mandami, and I'm sure the other. I'm sure there was money into that Somali that ran for mayor too in Minneapolis.
So these are not my allegations. These are findings in the report. And actually, they say themselves, Linda Sarsour, who is an iconic leader in this organization.
An extremist.
An extremist and an anti-Semite. And I would say as Islamist as they come, she is announcing that the largest donation to our mayor-elect came from California CARE. $3 million.
Wow.
Not only that, but NCRI has found that the campaign of Mamdani, a lot of the social media algorithms were foreign. They were not intrinsic to New York. So we create this digital fiction that he's a political inevitability, and that's been manipulated from outside, from digital impact, mm-hmm. and also potentially outside finances.
My hunch is a lot through TikTok.
Yes, TikTok. This is not to impugn Mayor Mamdani or American Muslims. Many Muslims may have contributed to this, thinking that they're becoming involved in the political landscape of the United States, not knowing how it's being manipulated.
So how do you feel about there's a sense, like, for example, in Dearborn, Michigan, you see that Muslim mayor who says, I don't want to be a melting pot in America. I want to keep my own culture. I don't want to lose my identity in American culture. That's not the attitude, obviously, that have kept America thriving for 250 years.
And that is not the mindset that attracted me to this country almost 34 years ago. But that is signs of a desire for separatism, signs for a desire not really of parallel societies, but closed societies. That comes back to the epic housing scandal that was in Texas, where the spiritual leader of a Muslim group there, who'd been very pro October 7th, was spearheading a housing complex for 1,000 families, which they initially stated was to build a Muslim community. Texans felt it was Muslim only. So there's an effort to capture Muslims in America and separate them off to create political change.
How do you feel about the Somali, their special status being rescinded?
So I don't know if that's been precipitated by these reports of potentially $86 million of funds going somewhere and some of it in Shabab. I think that it's probably necessary. It's also very disturbing to honest, decent Muslims in this country that participate and contribute, but it seems very intentional exploitation of federal dollars. And yes, I want to give you one example that just happened a couple of nights ago in Italy. The Italian government under Meloni has identified a Muslim Brotherhood, Italian Egyptian national in Turin, that was preaching and promoting Islamism and has had him deported back to Egypt and stripped him of Italian citizenship, which is a rarity. So what I believe this report will do, NCRI is going to guide our federal agencies to take a closer look. Was this sloppy bookkeeping? I think it looks more like financial misconduct, and it is deliberate. And then hold accountable the individuals who were responsible for this, because that needs to be addressed.
All right, Dr. Kanta Ahmed, stick around. We've got a few more things to talk about. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Real talk, real guests, real insight. Where curiosity meets conversation. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We all love a legendary comeback. And Degree Original Cool Rush is back and better than ever. Cool Rush isn't just a scent. It's a movement, a fan favorite that delivers bold, fresh vibes and all-day sweat protection. Whether you have a man that spends hours in the gym, heads into the office early, or is just trying to stay fresh on a long day, Cool Rush has their back. Head to your local Walmart or Target and grab Degree Cool Rush, the fan favorite scent from the world's number one antiperspirant brand.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We've got a few more minutes with Dr. Kanta Ahmed, Senior Fellow of Independent Women's Forum, member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Great knowledge of the Middle East throughout Europe, too. And, of course, what's happening here. Doctor, first off, when we talk about Iraq, we used to talk about it every day, 10, 20 times a day. But we have a situation where there is somewhat of representative government emerging there. We always felt good about the Kurds.
Yes.
We always felt like they understood us and they were loyal allies. But what about the rest of Iraq?
So, yes, I was just with the Iranian Kurdistan region a few weeks ago, and they are staunchly pro-American, pro-Trump, pro-Republican.
You said Iranian or Iraqi? It's
Iraqi Kurdistan. Okay. So they're staunchly in favor of President Trump and the United States, and they're really unwavering in their support. There was just a general election in Iraq. The participation was not as high as usual, but the election went off well. The Shia cleric, Muqtada al-Sadr, told his followers to boycott the election. He was somehow disenchanted. I'm not sure exactly why. One of the concerns that both in Iraqi Kurdistan and federal Iraq is the operation of the popular mobilization forces. Those are Iranian-backed militia. They're Iraqi nationals. A number of them are designated as foreign terrorist organizations and criminal networks. They subvert the sovereignty of Iraq. They subvert the democracy in Iraq. There used to be 12 groups. There are now 8 that have come, been subjugated. 4 remain, and the U.S. Department of Treasury is targeting them with financial sanctions, and that is helping the stability of Iraq.
So that's just it. When, if you could get Iran in order, how many other things fall into place? Because then the militias, Iraq would have a chance. They don't like the Iranians historically. They have pride. They want to be Iraqis.
Well, Iraq is a country rich in human resources and natural resources. It was vibrant when I visited there. People were in restaurants late at night. People were getting married in hotels.
Really?
Everybody
is. Did you feel comfortable walking the streets?
Oh, I was very comfortable. I traveled alone. I was able to go wherever I wanted. I met with my friends, both men and women. They were traveling to see me.
Did people know you were an American?
Oh, yes, they do. They watch us. They watch your show. So they know I'm an American. And they know my views. And they're very supportive and welcoming. In fact, while I was there, I wanted the opportunity to go and visit Syria, and I was able to do that by land.
Really? That is stunning to me.
So I had 2 big requests. I wanted to meet General Mazlum Abdi, who is the commander of the Syrian Democratic Forces. I believe he's probably the most important military figure in Syria and is a key to the future of the stability of Syria.
What portions of the country does the Syrian government control?
So the central Syrian government now is headed by Ahmed al-Shara, and he has purportedly around 50,000 troops. A lot of the country is without stability, is lawless. It's not a place that I could go or even a highly seasoned overseas operative could go. It's extremely dangerous. General Mazlum secures the northeast part of Syria, which is home to the Kurds, the Yazidis, Christians, secular Muslim Arabs that are not Islamists. After the Druze were attacked, you saw by the jihadists and the Alawites, many of those minorities have been fleeing under his protection. And he's been strongly allied, the Syrian Democratic Forces, with the United States for 10 years fighting ISIS.
So our presence is about what, 400 guys?
In Syria, I'm not sure of the exact numbers now. And
do you think it's important we stay there?
It's critical that we have a big footprint in northeast Syria. I believe the United States is planning to build a base in Damascus. And more important, we need to stay in Erbil in Iraqi Kurdistan, where there's a land route, and we've had great relationships.
It sounds good for us strategically and for you from our perspective, but do you think the Syrian government wants us to have a presence here?
Oh, I'm sure Ahmed al-Shara would like as free a hand as possible, but he's not going to get that. His guarantors are President Trump and MBS. And it's very important that both Saudi Arabia and the United States hold him accountable for protecting minorities. The government structure has to be decentralized. Mm-hmm. Those states where the minorities live have to have a strong government that then connects with the central Damascus government.
And he well, according to reports, was impressive when he came to the White House. And do you think? How do you think that played in Syria? Did you hear bad things? Or
I spoke to Syrian Democratic Forces and personnel who had to fight HTS when it was led by this person. So his credentials and his history is well known as a jihadist.
Yeah, it's problematic. We got to see if he had a change. Let's hope. Anyway, Dr. Ahmed, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Brian.
Stay safe.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Thanks so much for Dr. Ahmed for coming in. And we have a lot going on today. We are tracking the latest developments and what's going on with this U.S., Russia, Ukraine, EU, all the talks going on to try to land that plane and get that war over with. I know it's in Russia's court. We'll talk about that. We're also talking about everything to do with the economy leading up to Thanksgiving. We'll keep you up to date on that. But if you want to know what's weighing down a lot of people in our country, it's worry about AI. People are intrigued by it. They don't want to be left behind by it, but they worry about losing jobs for it. The one thing is pretty clear, though. When it comes to medical advancements, when it comes to advancements, when it comes to our Pentagon, our military, it's really intriguing about the things we can accomplish also in a race against China. They're number two or number one. We got to make sure we beat them there. Aviv Shapira joins us now, co-founder and the CEO of Extend, a world leader in battle-proven AI robotics, who just recently secured a multi-billion-dollar contract with the Pentagon. Welcome back. Welcome, Aviv. Good to see you.
Same here. Nice to be here. Thank you very much.
So first off, tell us about what you plan on bringing to the Pentagon.
So as part of Pete Hegseth, contribution to the world of Department of War, bringing 1 million drones, right? That's the goal. We're part of that effort. So we're actually bringing AI-enabled drones, meaning that they can actually fly without human intervention all the way in the field, making their own decisions, specifically in the world of one-way attack drones, meaning that they can actually replace humans in some of the most dangerous missions on this planet. We're one of these companies bringing that to the to our end users and keeping those soldiers safe.
So what have you learned watching what's happening in Ukraine?
We are actually fighting in Ukraine as well. For unfortunate reasons, we've been fighting in Israel, in Ukraine, in Iran, twice in Afghanistan a few years ago. So we actually have a good understanding of how to actually use drones in battle, as opposed to some of the companies who are just training. Again, for unfortunate reasons, and that actually gave us a lot of perspective. Specifically, Ukraine is a very difficult war. A lot of jamming, a lot of cyber attacks. So drones are really hard to fly there. So you have to get around using AI to actually solve some of these challenges.
Yeah, I understand both sides are trying to block the other sides on a regular basis. But it's amazing how much advancements we had since this war started, since the Russia invasion. Because this was trench warfare. This was being fought by tanks. How did it change?
Yeah, I mean, think about a $500 drone destroying a $10 million tank. This is the reality of new warfare. And even more than that, we actually see software changing warfare. So, think about these drones. They can fly fast, they can fly low, they can carry a lot of munitions. But using AI, they can start suddenly be smarter and smarter every day that goes by. And that's the big news. How do you actually take a piece of metal, which is essentially a flying computer, and using AI, it can suddenly do much more than just watch over us.
So how do you, so the contract you sign with us, what is, what's the, on the contract? You have to get to a million. What's your goal?
So the contract is pretty unique in a way that it's AI driven swarm drones. What does that mean in practical words? So as you know, complex missions require more than one drone or robot to actually complete it. So you have sometimes indoor drones, outdoor drones, sometimes even ground robotics operating together. The idea is to actually orchestrate all of them using one operator in a single mission. So this basically means that we actually have to operate in very contested environments, as you mentioned before, you know, fighting that, you know, that jamming coming from like Russian jammers, but having different types of tools. So you have an indoor drone, for example, and an outdoor drones operating together as one system.
Pretty impressive. So where's China at compared to us and you?
I think the, you know, we all read on the news, they're like 1,000 times, even 10,000 times more equipped than us. So they manufacture much quicker. So the whole industrial base in the US has to ramp up to actually keep up. But when it comes to AI, I think we're giving a pretty good fight. You know, AI is based on software. And when it comes to software, the US market, the Western world is, I think, more advanced than China. And this is our chance to win using the brains and not the quantities.
Where do you do your manufacturing?
So we have a facility based in Tampa. We're close to our customers. We work very closely with the SOCOM community. And this is where we manufacture today most of the drones today. Last year, about 5,000 drones have been delivered.
How many of your parts are depending on China parts?
So when it comes to the U.S. government, there is something called the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act. So we can't really buy smart components from China. Things like, computation models, sensors. When it comes to plastics and like carbon and screws and things like that, then you can buy, you know, you can buy from China and it doesn't even matter. It's okay for now. For now.
Yeah, for now. But the goal is to bring it all here. When people get worried about, everyone always quotes Eisenhower, be worried about the military industrial base. That's not the problem anymore. Because it is a problem that we don't have a big military industrial base. Have you seen any substantial improvements over the last year?
When the war started specifically in Israel, another country that we operate in, we had to actually make our own self-reliant facility to manufacture drones. We couldn't rely on China. We couldn't rely on anyone else. The same thing applies for the U.S. And we're seeing this in Ukraine, by the way. They actually manufacture 4 million drones a year, only completely on their own. In the U.S., we're a bit behind when it comes to the industrial base. But I think the government is going to be up to speed. Everyone is worried about it, and it's a lot of money is being pouring through the big beautiful bill to actually create that infrastructure act in the U.S. to actually deal with that problem.
So I was talking to Senator Tom Cotton. He's chairman of Armed Services, mm-hmm. and he was saying that one of his big focuses: can we stop a drone attack right now? We notice that most of our bases are being buzzed and being observed. By drones. We don't know where these drones are from. Mm-hmm. And if people started sending drones into our buildings right now, if they started doing that, where's our defense? And the answer is we don't have it. So what role do you see yourself or you as an expert playing in that?
I would like to comment. So 2 years ago, if you asked me that question, I would tell you it's a cyber war, right? Drones are changing frequencies and you try to kill them with different jamming devices. In the last year, even 2 years, drones are flying without communication at all, even without GPS. So essentially, imagine them as a piece of metal flying in the sky, and you have to physically kill them. So you need countermeasures such as lasers, such as drone versus drones, such as even Vulcans. That's the future of counter US.
Would you call it Vulcans? Technology. You say Vulcans?
Yeah, like a Vulcan gun, like shooting them with bullets. This is what they do in Ukraine, physical interception, right? So physically killing these drones, taking them down from the skies. You call me an expert, but in extent, what we do basically is we build a drone that fights other drones. So physically, we actually shoot them down with a net. This is what we do in extent.
Can you describe that for me? What do you mean with a net?
Yeah. So imagine a drone is coming at you, let's say to the Pentagon, God forbid, And you detect that drone using a radar on the ground, and you send the drone that flies faster to that drone and basically shoots a net, like, you know, to capture it, like a fishing net, like a large fishing net. And that drone is then intercepted. This is part of the things that we're doing on the borders of Israel, for example, and Ukraine as well.
And but I imagine that would work on our southern border.
It would work on any border.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would work on any border. The problem is the Mexican border, for example, is huge. You would have, you know, drones fly maybe for like 5 miles. You would need like thousands of systems to be deployed. Yeah. That's a problem. I'm not going to lie to you.
Aviv, so getting this contract is great for your company. Why do you think you can? Why do you think you could satisfy it?
So first of all, we've built a pretty big and substantial facility in Tampa to actually physically manufacture these drones. Everything is made in the U.S. with U.S. components. So that's number one. But the magic is actually the software. The brain behind these systems came from 6 years of know-how fighting different conflicts in more than 5 different countries. And that software is what's going to make the difference for the U.S. government as well. And this is what's going to keep our soldiers safe.
I'm going to ask you a real fundamental question that shows I've never designed a drone. Who's deciding who's putting the AI intelligence into the drone to decide what its mission is? So you said the band don't control it, like we don't use the joysticks anymore. Okay, I understand that. You're saying that you program it, I get it. So who's deciding what that drone does?
So we call that AI pilots. Everything that a human does, we learn as best as we can, we copy it, and then we hand this over to an AI pilot to complete that mission. Today, I think we're roughly at the 70% mark. So 70% of the missions done by soldiers and police officers can be done by AI. That 30% is the hardest. When we get to 10%, it's going to be even harder.
Wow!
But that's the future of warfare in general.
Wow. Aviv Shapira, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Co-founder and CEO of Extend, a world leader in battle-proven AI robotics. Go get him, Aviv. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. Glad you're on our side. 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show, back in a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is an important press conference that is being held to let you know what we're all doing, resisting this low-down, dirty, no-good, filthy president.
How do you really understand?
So that is the ridiculous Congresswoman Maxine Waters, who just keeps getting reelected. It's just one of the big problems with our system. Nobody runs against her. She lives in a ritzy neighborhood, but represents a working class, rundown areas of South Central. And she just says the most evil things possible. Remember, if you see somebody, a Trump official, get in their face, scream at them, take them out. She says stuff like that. But that is the attitude. I mean, that's the attitude that you get from the person standing to her immediate right. You probably didn't see the video, and that is Crockett. And now there's a huge pushback. They call it the Fight Club among Senator Elizabeth Warren, Senator Bernie Sanders, Senator Aguilar, the senator from Arizona, Gallego, senator who used to be a congressman there. So their attitude is the leadership is not fighting hard enough against Trump. Are you kidding me? The leadership's not fighting hard against Trump. That's all they do is fight. That's all they've been obsessed with fighting since 2015. They couldn't believe he was running for office. They couldn't believe he got the nomination. They couldn't believe he won. They couldn't believe 2020 he almost won. They were outraged after January 6th, and they never got over it. And then he runs again, and they tried to put him in jail. And now you say the problem is we're not fighting Trump. I don't get this. Fighting has nothing to do with it. You could be bold and direct. Just have an idea of what you would do if you got back into power. And that's the crazy thing that is coming out from these Democrats, because I don't see any logic into their approach. Then Senator Cory Booker says something interesting, but I don't hear any ideas from him. Now, this guy's been in there forever, right? He was a former mayor of Newark, New Jersey. People had such high hopes for him, but he's like an actor. There's nothing about him that's real. Nice enough guy, but what has he actually accomplished? What does he do? What does he stand for? Where's the last bill he put forward? Cut 36. Here he is on the New York Times on a podcast.
I'm one of those people that's saying, as our party has failed, they've made terrible mistakes, and I want us to emerge in this moment, not focusing on party, but refocusing on people. The Democratic Party has failed in my generation.
But how? You know, but what are you saying? They went all in on green technology, and now they're looking at Bill Gates and saying, you were the one who led us there, but now you realize the world's not going to end. Then you destroyed oil and gas in that business. You tried to infiltrate the boards of major health and oil companies to try to turn them green. Remember that? Vilifying anything that brought in, you know, for example, fracking, stopping the growth, and vilifying people because of the color of their skin, and not because they're black, but because they're white. And people are tired of the political correctness. Now, if you say that, okay, I'm interested. Katie Miller, an emerging personality, the wife of Stephen Miller, who played a valuable role at the White House and I think still works for Elon Musk, now has got a very successful podcast, joined Laura last night, Cut 38.
The Democrat Party is like an episode of the Looney Tunes with Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny running around right now, Laura. What we just saw in the last segment was a person who's running to represent Nashville, who's openly said she hates Nashville, who's denying the fact that men can't get pregnant. As the mom of three young kids, I can assuredly tell you, unequivocally, that men can't get pregnant, that only women can. And when you're running candidates consistently that have been convicted and have all of these charges and have thrown mashed potatoes at their husbands, this is that same identity politics that lost Kamala Harris the election in 2024.
And what she's talking about is Katie Porter, who actually did that. The woman's nuts. I mean, she's definitely unhinged. Lucky to be in Congress, now wants to be governor, and I still think she's in first. And then you got Eric Swalwell, an unserious individual that can't even stand up and say, I don't think that trans men belong in women's bathrooms, and says it's up to the military to counter Trump. I mean, these are the types of people that you can't even debate with. I mean, there's a debate on the right, no doubt about it. I mean, should you abandon Israel? The way right is saying that. Crazy, in my view. Go ahead, engage in that debate. Should we be involved in all in Ukraine? We know about that. Does Russia have a point that NATO expanded too much? I don't even know what you're talking about. It's the defensive organization. You don't want us like Rand Paul involved in anything outside our borders, and you don't want to approve one spending bill? Yeah, there are people on the right that are on fringe. But for the most part, I look at Democrats. I don't see any plan to make the country grow. Decreasing regulation, doing all of the above when it comes to energy, building up our military in a responsible, innovative way, not vilifying people and not focusing on reparations when it comes to American society today, celebrating the history of the country and being proud that you're from here. I don't see anybody saying that. I'm very curious to see if people are going to be making some speeches in their area, whether it's a small town in Virginia or a big town in upstate New York. Are they going to be talking about how great our country is and what we came from this year on 250? And then you have things like crime. I'm not asking you to be tough or easy on crime. I want you to use logic. For example, if people have been arrested 72 times on vicious crimes over the last 4 or 5 years, and then a judge says, and a prosecutor says, you got to put this guy in jail, and he cuts off his ankle bracelet, and they say, well, you do that again, you're going to be arrested, but they let him out again. They recommend it. Everybody recommends he go to jail. But instead, they let him out on his own recognizance, give him a new ankle bracelet. He goes and pours gasoline on a woman in a train, chases her down because she realized what was happening as she gets lit on fire. A 26-year-old who just wanted to live her life, who just happened to be at the wrong place with an absolute lunatic. There's only one party who's letting these people out. And I'm not talking about someone who had one DUI and they thought was healed and after a year and a half got behind the wheel again. I don't blame that judge for giving that person a second chance. But I blame this judge for doing it. That's what these judges are, so lenient on crime. They make the world dangerous. They want to empty out our prisons. See, this is common sense against nonsense or no sense. That's where I think the big change is. Here's an example. After this week, 100% increase in Chicago on shootings and death. Of crime increase, Donald Trump just simply said to the mayor and governor who are fighting against ICE and against him every step of the way, get your act together. And even Mayor Brandon Johnson says, you know, we didn't do enough to prevent that attack. Really, those attacks? They were at a Christmas tree lighting in Chicago, and a bunch of 14 to 16 year olds who refuse to put under curfew go raid and start beating people up and shooting people. I mean, you got a huge problem and you don't want to control it.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow starting November 30th on FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, and it's really intriguing. As I mentioned before, there was a time when I did this job, and you kind of said to yourself, man, leading up to Thanksgiving, there's just no news going on. Leading up to Christmas, well, you do stuff about turkey pardons, and you do things about traveling, and you pretend like airport. It surprises you that airports are crowded, and that's really it. But that those are the old days. It's just not slowing down, and I love it, believe me. But, I mean, literally, I get in the car around 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm lucky enough to have a driver on the way in, so I get to work the whole time. Literally, I do not get through all the packet and all the information in the hour it takes me to get here. It takes me another half hour to go through it. But when the holidays come, it usually thins out. The packet thins out. It has not thinned out at all. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Griff Jenkins. He's filling in for Lawrence, and he was on Fox and Friends Weekend. And Karl Rove is standing by. He wanted me to buy him a few minutes. He's just getting ready. I think he's putting on cologne. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
My oath and every oath every member of the military took is loyalty to the Constitution, not to a person.
That is Senator Mark Kelly, the treason treatment for the Democratic Five as the FBI zeroes in on their motives behind their anti-Trump message to the military. We also look at Dems' deranged, disturbing meltdowns as they try for midterm victory.
Number two.
So on the one hand, you've got some improvement in affordability. On the other hand, you've got a jobs picture that's just a little bit murky. The jobs numbers the past few months have been weak.
Affordability, that's the key to Trump's term, too. We look at the number and what it would take to raise the consumer confidence in a media environment where the anti-GOP rhetoric is blasted night and day.
Number one.
Russia has not made one concession in all of these negotiations. Not one. And why is that? Because he has always believed time is on his side.
That is General Jack Keane talking about Russia's impetus to try to do a legitimate negotiation and bring peace in Ukraine. Ball's in Russia's court as major progress is made with Ukraine, with the EU and the U.S. But is Steve Witkoff the best to deal with Vladimir Putin? He's in Russia now. I say no. I think he's a well-meaning guy that probably negotiates big deals. I don't think he understands the history, and I think he trusts the Russians. They already undermined him. Do you hear what happened? They leaked a call out of him talking to Russia, urging Putin to call Trump before Zelensky comes to the White House, at which time it says, make sure you start the call by saying that Donald Trump, how smart he is, compliment him, and then say how he's a peace president. Really? I mean, is that working to America's interest? Karl Rove has seen it all, done it all, been in that position of power himself, former deputy chief of staff, Wall Street Journal columnist, the senior advisor to the president, George W. Bush, at one point. Karl, welcome back. Karl, I don't think that Steve Witkoff should be leading the charge in Russia. Do you?
May I first say one thing? I'm a Texan. We don't wear cologne.
Is that true?
Get that out of your mind.
Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, that's true, man.
Don't
come
you guys
want to
smell
show
good and sexy?
Well, we do, man. So come on down here and we'll show you what we do with New Yorkers wearing cologne.
Wow.
So, I totally agree. I mean, he may be well-meaning, but it is an incredible miscarriage of justice for him to sit there and think it is his job to help the Russians negotiate the best possible deal by giving them inside scoop on how to deal with Trump. And that's not his job. His job is to represent the president of the United States, not to grease the skids for Vladimir Putin. Terrible judgment. Terrible judgment.
Why does Putin have to get on the phone and stop him from selling tomahawks to Zelensky? Yeah. That would have been a game changer. Look, they got Putin to the table. Doesn't he know that?
Exactly. And look, Donald Trump knows one thing in the bottom of his heart totally, which is you operate from a position of strength. You're not going to get Putin to agree to a deal unless Putin is afraid of not doing a deal. And, you know, the being able to strike energy facilities and utilities and power plants and munitions factories and military installations, you know, hundreds of miles away from the border with Ukraine is a real troublesome thing for Vladimir Putin. And for President Trump to, you know, get this deal done, he's going to have to strengthen the Ukrainians so that the Russians say, you know what, it's in our interest to get a deal, not it's in our interest to wait these people out and have this whole country land up in our lap after ungodly amounts of munitions and lives have been lost.
So what I just think is this, and I'm not I just care a lot, and I just talk to everybody possible. But I just think that if you want to get some leverage on Putin, we always misjudge Russia's strength. We've done that for 50 years. It's not a Trump problem. It's a problem we've always had. So when you put, evidently, when we put those strict sanctions on those two behemoth oil companies, Rosneft and Lukoil, it really mattered, and it affected India's purchases of oil and gas because they didn't want any part of the sanctions. So I got it. So if you want strategically not to go after China, that's a decision. But they are buying the most oil. But here's the other thing, Carl. If you just say, listen, Vladimir, we're getting closer and closer to a deal. I need you to honestly broker. If I feel as though you're not playing ball, they're going to get tomahawks. They're going to get tomahawks, and the Senate sanctions are going to be on my desk, and I'll be able to sign them right away. The secondary sanctions will be more devastating than anything you've had to deal with. I hope I don't have to sign it. Do it. I mean, what do we care? We didn't have great relations before we got there.
Yeah. Look, I don't even think he needs to be that precise. He can simply say, Vladimir, you don't do a deal, you're not going to like what is going to happen to you next.
Yeah. It can't be the status quo. You can't be go back to fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you can't, and you can't, you're not going to, I mean, it's amazing. They get more territory than they now occupy, and they get absolution for the vicious war crimes that they have committed against innocent civilians. I mean, it is just amazing to me what Witkoff has, you know, sort of laid there out on the table or accepted from the Russians. And you're right. This is not Donald Trump. Donald Trump is, you know, look, he didn't say to Hamas, look, we're going to give all of the vicious killers who murdered people and raped people on October 7th a pass. He didn't do that when he brought about peace in Gaza. He did so from a position of strength. He needs to do so in this situation as well.
Here's what Dave Ignatius from The Washington Post said, cut 11.
Some progress is being made. I'm told that the list of 28 items has been narrowed to 20. And of those, 18, 90%, have been basically resolved. Unfortunately, the two that remain, although I don't know the details, are described as among the hardest. So just getting to yes with Ukraine is still not done. And the sign of that is that President Zelensky is not coming to Washington to meet with President Trump. Trump wants agreement on all the points. But to your correct point, that then the hard part begins. I mean, getting agreement right between the U.S. and Ukraine is one thing. Getting Russia to sign on to that is something entirely different.
And then we're waiting till Monday to send Witkoff. Excuse me, we need it today. I mean, what are we waiting till Monday for? I mean, we're in Abu Dhabi with the Secretary of Army. I'm fine with that. I'd be much better with Keith Kellogg in there. He's got all the experience, knows the area, not afraid of Russia. But okay, he wants to back off or they want him off, whatever it takes. All right, that's fine. But I wouldn't wait till Monday. Why are you waiting until Monday? Meanwhile, they're sending drones into apartment buildings.
Yeah. Well, and remember, there is no Thanksgiving holiday in the UAE, no Thanksgiving holiday in Russia, no Thanksgiving holiday in Ukraine. Yes, you may discombobulate the American negotiators not being able to be with their families on Thanksgiving, but stay at the problem. And you're absolutely right. Putin is playing Trump for a sucker. And at some point, Trump is going to say, you know what, I'm sick and tired of you underestimating me. And my hope is that is sooner rather than later.
Because the thing is, Carl, he's not out on a limb. He's got the backing of most in his party and all the Democrats, just about.
Yeah,
so he doesn't have to buck his own party. I know there's people on the right. Oh, I can't understand. They think Russia really is abused by the expansion of NATO. They think that Russia and Ukraine are equally to blame. I don't get that mindset ever.
I don't either. I mean, the idea that Ukraine is responsible for a surprise invasion by Russia is just idiotic. And the idea that, look, think about this, the people who really have reason to complain are the Ukrainians, because every single deal that they have signed with the Russians going back to 1989 has been violated by the Russians. The Russians, remember, guarantee their sovereignty. A lot of the old Soviet Empire nuclear weapons were located in Ukraine. Give up those nuclear weapons, surrender them to the control of the United States and Russia, and we, Russia and the United States together, will guarantee your sovereignty. That was the initial promise. And what happened to that? I mean, Vladimir Putin is granted at that point, you know, sort of a bureaucrat inside the KGB. But nonetheless, that is what the nation of Russia pledged to Ukraine. And every subsequent agreement that they made has been broken just as that one was.
Right. So there's got to be security guarantees. And we have the impossible. Yeah. Europeans have volunteered their troops. France and the UK has said, we're going to put troops there. And the Russians said, that's never going to fly. So let's go talk about it. If they want to talk about it, okay, that's called a negotiation. But it's got to be security guarantees, not a piece of paper. I do want to get your take on the midterms. I want you to hear what Kevin McCarthy said about MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene, bowing out and just retiring January 5th.
She's leaving Congress, but I don't think that's the end that you'll see about her. And I think, look, I've always believed that any time you have an elected official that's known by three initials, they're effective on what they do. And I found Marjorie to be very effective, but she's almost like a canary in a coal mine. And this is something inside Congress they better wake up, because they're going to get a lot of people retiring and they got to focus. I think keeping members out of Congress, you only get 2 years to be in the majority. And if the Democrats get you not to work every day for 2 months, that's losing 2 months of the majority.
And that's what happened with the shutdown. So what do you think about his assessment? What are you hearing?
Well, I do think he's right that I don't know if I call her a canary in the coal mine. I think she's the first. But there are others. I mean, you know, Michael McCall, who's Mike.
I know.
He lives across the lake from me here in Austin, former chairman of the Homeland Security, former head of the Intel Committee. You know, he's not going to be a chairman again, at least in the foreseeable future. He's already had two significant committee chairmanships, and he's 62, and he's saying, you know what, I have another chapter in my life. I'm not running again. And I think we're likely to see more of that. And we've seen a large number already. Congressman from Tennessee bowed out in order to get involved in a business deal in South America. And we have a special election next Tuesday to fill his spot. So, I do think that there's a sense in Congress of, why am I here? You know, this is not constructive. I don't feel like I'm making a difference. I came here to serve my state and my country and my district, and I don't feel like I'm we're doing things that are useful to them. And so, why am I spending my time here? And it's always easier to reelect a responsible incumbent than it is to try and fill an open seat.
This 7th district in Tennessee, this Democrat is so out there.
Oh.
I mean, she's on tape ripping, on tape saying Nashville's terrible, country music's awful. She's basically does not walk back when asked if defund the police is where you stand. She goes, I'm here to talk about the issues. You idiot, that is an issue. And then
yes.
You see her attitude when it comes, she goes, men and women can both get pregnant. So this is a dream candidate. And the 7th district, Trump won by 22, and I think Green won by 20. So why are the Democrats seeing vulnerability and pouring over $1 million into this?
Well, first of all, because they just came through an election in Virginia and New Jersey where they did better than expected. And they're hoping, I mean, imagine if they were able somehow to pull this off, what a blow it would be for Republican enthusiasm. Look, I think it is going to be closer than 20 or 22 points, but she is such a lunatic. And it says something about the Democrats and their ultimate weakness that they cannot figure out, that you cannot have a lunatic who says that, black men are being arrested when white women call the police, and that police are a form of institutional racism. You cannot have somebody that is that out, men and women both can be, you know, can give birth. I mean, it's like, what are you thinking? And she's a nut. And this is the candidate that they put up. Originally she sent out a text saying, if you are a white politician being opposed in a Democratic primary by a black opponent, maybe you ought to think about this moment in history. In other words, white people get out of the primary so that black people can win. Well, guess what? She beat a black state representative to get the Democratic nomination. Didn't even listen to her own advice. But that's how out of touch she is. And so, yeah, they're going to spend a bunch of money. I think it's going to come up short. It may be closer than 20 or 22 points simply because Democrats are energized and Republicans are complacent. But at the end of the day, there is a fundamental problem that the Democrats have that will become more and more evident in the 2026 midterm elections if they nominate more lunatics like that woman.
I have two topics to get through in 2 minutes. All right. First, I'm going to talk about the divide on the left. How big a deal is the socialist movement now that Mondami won? And now is the DSA is part of his transition team and part of his cabinet. And the fact is he does have charisma and is very comfortable on who he is. How big of a problem is the socialist within the Democratic Party?
Well, it's going to be big because, look, they're not going to be able to win in 2026 or 2028 by nominating DSA candidates, particularly in 2028. The notion that they're going to be able to nominate Mamdani. Remember, 66% of the registered voters in the city of New York are registered Democrats, and 22% are registered independents. Only 16% are Republicans, conservatives, or a bunch of little minor parties. This guy was the nominee of the Democratic Party and got 50.4%. There's already a problem inside the Democratic Party with a lot of Democrats saying, I'm not a socialist. And all those lunatic views that are anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, anti-police, you know, anti-wealth, anti-creation, anti-free markets, I don't believe in that stuff. And so it's going to be a problem for the Democrats. He's bright, he's young, he's smart, but he is also very left-wing, and the country is not. Maybe New York is, but not the country.
What about the extreme right, the extreme right on the right, and how much of a problem it could be for Republicans in the midterms?
It could be a big problem, and the Republicans had better stand up against the anti-Semitics and the anti-Israel crowd and the bigots and, you know, Holocaust deniers and neo-Nazis. Tucker Carlson inviting a neo-Nazi, an avowed neo-Nazi who applauds Hitler and Joseph Stalin, is a problem for Republicans, just like we had a problem in the 1950s and 60s.
Gotcha. Karl Rove, thank you.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
My first reaction was, why the hell did you put this video out? I know you're trying to poke at him. Of course you don't obey an illegal order. Of course there are standards and processes that our military has followed, not just for decades, but for centuries. That's a given. You're doing this just to create a political issue. And shame on you, because there are men and women who are serving in Japan, in Korea, all over the globe, in the Middle East, in other Asian countries, and this is Thanksgiving, and they're not home, and they're sacrificing for this country, and you're playing politics at this point?
That is Frank Luntz, and he is working with West Point and working there and doing his communication thing, pollster. He is someone as up the middle as you're going to get, and he said that, I don't get it. I don't get why Senator Kelly, I don't get why Alyssa Slotkin. What was the point of this? Same thing we've been saying. And at the other end of the network, here's General James Spider Marks on CNN. Listen, cut 32.
What he and his colleagues did was inappropriate. He could have taken a step back and said, why am I sending this message, which clearly is an insult to our chain of command?
Yeah, he's on CNN. Most of the time it's negative against Trump. But he also says, what is Kelly doing? What are you doing? So now, I don't really think it makes anything better by bringing them in front of the FBI, but it shows they're accountable to a degree.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is here, Fox and Friends Weekend co-host. You're filling in for John Roberts today in a few hours.
That's right.
By the way, have you heard the news that I'm on the five? Okay, I'll keep going. I'm on the five. So are some other people on the five, including none other than Jimmy Failla, which is a huge mistake, and Guy Benson. What do the three of us have in common?
You all three have radio shows.
Yes.
But unlike...
On what network?
Fox News Radio.
Thank you.
But unlike Failla in... Guy Benson, I will say that for the first time ever in the ratings of radio, and I started in the 90s, did it throughout the early 2000s, your show has landed at the top of the global list. So people not only within the continental United States, Hawaii, and Guam and Puerto Rico, but worldwide, you have the number one radio show. So I'm here to just congratulate
even in,
you.
And this is even in the Czech Republic. They do real-time translation.
They do. They like it very much. They particularly like, you know, when you go on tangents, the kill-me tangents, they often...
They're pro-tangent.
Learn...
I do my own weave.
They learn things that they can then take to their Czech water coolers and spark debate.
So 1 week ago today, we had the mayor-elect go meet in the White House. There were no fireworks. In fact, they were friendly. Here is Zohran Mamdani, the mayor-elect, still being questioned on why was that meeting friendly. Cut 37.
Did you expect him to like you as much as he did?
I was trying to prepare for a lot of different situations. Yeah. And it honestly felt like the most productive meeting we could have had.
Yeah.
I mean, a meeting where we talked about ULERP, we talked about, you know, groceries, Con Ed, rent, childcare. That feels like the best meeting you could have.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's just a widespread reaction. Some people were just befuddled. You know, people in the Jewish community were kind of, some of them were angry. Our own Sid Rosenberg, fantastic anchor at WABC, was like, as much as he loves Trump, he's very upset by it. What do you think about the ripple effects? To me, it makes total sense because Trump lays the groundwork. There were times when he had positive meetings with Cuomo. But he, when Cuomo starts going off and blaming him and not being receptive to different things he was doing during the pandemic, he would rip another one. And I think when he starts coming out against ICE, and things to that nature, I think it'll be problematic again.
Yeah, they're gonna clash. But you know, this is, in your sports guy, you appreciate this. This is a classic case of game loves game, game respects game. Mamdani is a charismatic young politician that was able to talk about issues of affordability and obviously have a massive victory. And I think President Trump gave real respect to start things off. They're going to clash on other things. By the way, you're talking about the reactions to Mamdani's win. I love, and we played this on Fox and Friends this morning, Michelle Wu in Boston said she doesn't want to, quote, bromance with the federal regime. What are you doing? Stay in your lane. What are we going to have Boston's mayor and New York's mayor go head to head on this? It makes no sense at all. And I think Democrats were actually, like Michelle Wu, showing their cards that they're actually jealous that Mamdani was able to go in there as a young, unskilled, he hasn't done a whole lot in his life, particularly in politics, was able to go there and get a win for himself. It was President Trump showing respect, trying to get off on the right foot, because if at the heart of it, he cares about New York. He's putting New York first.
Right.
But Mamdani did do a good job of carrying that out, playing that Oval Office meeting the right way. And even when he was asked by our own Jackie Heinrich directly, like, hey, so do you still think Trump's a fascist? The guy sitting next to you, and Trump tried to give him a way out. He stayed focused and was calm and poised on just saying, look, this is about doing what's right for New York.
Well, look, states are responsible for their utility costs, and the utility costs are high. And I would say part of that is Governor Cuomo said, let's get rid of this nuclear power plant. Crazy for no reason. And then he said, number two, we're not going to even have a pipeline go through our state. They had to go around it. So, and there's not going to be any fracking. They did an environmental study. Every time it said there's going to be no environmental impact, he said, we're still not going to frack. Well, what are you going to do then? Look at Pennsylvania's costs compared and New Jersey's. Look at Pennsylvania's costs compared to New Jersey and New York. So the president talked about Con Ed get their prices down. But you can't force Con Ed to get their prices down unless it's discovered they're gouging, and they haven't. Usually utilities don't gouge. It's because where are they getting the energy from to give to you? So if energy prices go up and you're freezing the rents, let's do the economic calculus.
Right.
What happens? Those apartments stay empty. It's not going to cost anything. No repairs get done, or people walk away from their buildings.
It's going to be obviously a disaster. But, you know, I do think I'm fascinated. One thing we don't know about Mamdani right now, Brian, is who really is advising him right now. Remember the phone call that was leaked to the press that Obama had, you know, talked with Mamdani and wished him well. He didn't endorse him because he didn't do that in local elections. But he said he would be there for an ear. He'd help him if he needed to. I feel like we'll eventually learn that some of the people right now on that transition team, people that are advising him, are perhaps former Obama aides or people that Obama has helped bring in, so that when Mamdani has to figure out some way to actually govern on issues like Con Ed, as opposed to what he was saying on the campaign trail to get young people to go out and vote, I think we're going to see signs of that.
going to get a lot of people retiring. We'll see what happens in New York. But we also know what happened in Chicago. Crime is up 100% from this time last weekend as this weekend. When you see a Christmas tree lighting result in a shooting, when you see someone getting on a subway train or a train and gets doused with gasoline and get burned on fire, and you find out the person had 72 prior arrests. I mean, things like that happening in Chicago at the same time they're pushing back against Trump. You wonder why that issue isn't bigger in America, where one party is for crime or anti-crime and the other one is ambivalent, at the best ambivalent. Well, why does that not resonate more?
Well, you would think it would, and obviously we have the traditional dichotomy between the urban areas and the rural areas. But at the end of the day, you have, as you mentioned, 385 murders to date in Chicago, nearly 1,400 shootings. The case of the guy, Lawrence Reed, that set the woman on fire in a horrific manner, had 72 prior arrests, 8 of which were felonies. When I was on day 1, 2, and 3 of that Operation Midway Blitz riding around, I took time just to talk to some Chicagoans here and there, even off camera, and said, wait, what do you think about this? Wait, are you really opposed to this, like your mayor is, like your governor is? And they said no. And that's why places like my hometown, Memphis, all Democratic leadership, from the mayor to city councilmen. Mm-hmm.
They found 161 kids.
Yeah, and Memphis embraced it and said, yeah, no, we're not going to disagree
Memphis,
with
they
it.
Found 161.
Yeah. And the Memphians are the same way I think a lot of the residents in Chicago feel, which is like, wait, let's – I don't want this to be a political issue. I want it to be a safety issue.
But I'll tell you, in Charlotte, when they showed up in Charlotte, the ICE and Border Patrol, FBI – National Guard, nobody was going to work. All the Hispanics working in the fields, the farms, the hospitality, no one's going to work. Now, the question is, are they all illegals? Do they feel as though if they're here legally, they really think the administration is going after just generic Hispanics? I think the reason why that might be the perception, I'm not saying the reality because I'm not there, is because they are going up in Home Depot and just grabbing people, show me your papers. That's not the mandate, I think, that's going to help the president in the midterms. I understand the sentiment. Mm-hmm. But just going into farms, raiding farms, and going to Home Depot, that's not the worst first. We have a lot of bad people out there.
It's not, but I'll give you an example. You know, about 30 minutes ago, I got a press release. I get all these press releases on a daily basis from ICE and from DHS, and they just deported successfully, turned over to the Salvadoran officials, an MS-13 senior gang leader they arrested in Boston.
Great.
He had been deported 3 prior times. At some point, came back into the country, had a criminal shop going up in Boston. So, you know, the more I feel like the administration highlights those cases, then they understand why, you know, everybody's got to ultimately go if you're here illegally. But in the case of ICE, they target these cases. In this case, that was
years going on.
Well,
if I target you and you're the MS-13 leader, and then the person next to you isn't a criminal that we know of, but you're not here illegally, I get it. You're out. I understand it. But I think you have to watch yourself in the Hispanic community where they feel like you're targeting them, even though most of the people who come through the southern border are
right.
Hispanic. You know? Right, so sure. That's not Trump's fault. That's the way the demographic breaks down. I wouldn't mind seeing some of those Chinese that came through with their pocket protectors and roller bags. Where are they? You know, can we grab some of them?
I was out in California for weeks on end with people literally setting up a shop, coming across like a travel agency.
Yeah.
Apart, and they're clean. They have roller bags right there. And, you know, I don't know. It's a good question. But I will say this, that, you know, there does seem to be a debate within the administration over whether or not the optics, as you say, of raiding a Home Depot parking lot is you know, in any way comparable to how the vast majority of Americans feel about removing the MS-13 guy I was talking about.
All right. So just real quick, when we talk about the socialist you were talking about before, I want you to hear Linda Sansour, this radical with CARE, who's now being targeted, thankfully, for their links to the Muslim Brotherhood. Also, we had Dr. Kanta Ahmed here, and she said they really don't have any license to operate in the U.S., even though they're giving tons of money to people like Mamdani and the Somalian candidate over in Minneapolis. Listen to her, cut 43.
The story is not just you know, that it's random that Zahran ascended to this place. It is our Muslim American communities. And I'll also say that it's Muslim money. The PACs that have supported Zahran, or a particular PAC that has supported Zahran, is probably over 80% of Muslim American donors in this country, high net donors, grassroots donors. And I want to make the point that the Unity and Justice Fund PAC, which is the CARE Super PAC, was the largest institutional donor to the pro-Zahran PAC in New York.
So they're not denying it. CARE's got to be examined. It's got to be looked at. They've been a very dubious group, especially come under scrutiny since 9/11.
Yeah, look, CARE operates very strongly in Washington, D.C. I mean, they're an outspoken group that picks various fights every week. There's something that they're outraged, but they're also an effective lobby. And so it'll be interesting. I mean, look, Omar Fateh in Minneapolis, as you mentioned, lost because people felt, well, you know what? We're not fully behind this guy. He sounds too radical. We're going to stick with Jacob Fry, who has his own problems.
He's
with
a clown.
Minneapolis, but it seemed to be, by just an observer looking on the outside in, right, it looked like it was a lesser of two evils.
So there's CARE and CARE Action. CARE Action's out there rounding up votes. Turns out the organization's 501c4 political arm is operating across 22 states without proper legal authorization, registration, or licensing. It raises money, issues endowments, and conducts voter influence campaigns while sharing leadership and infrastructure with CARE National. It is not even legally authorized to operate in Washington, D.C., where it's incorporated, creating exposure to wire fraud, deceptive solicitation, illegal coordination between charitable and political entities. In practice, CARE Action functions as a national political operative outside the compliance system. So if you're looking for a legal mechanism, you got it. You're not allowed to do this.
Yeah, but listen, CARE is very good from a PR standpoint at the ability to pick some case that we haven't heard about, blow it up, turn it into, you know, some racist, outrageous behavior. And I think, you know, we haven't heard much about places like, what if ICE goes into Dearborn, Michigan and finds illegal people, some of whom may be violent criminal illegal aliens? They will be the loudest to push back on that.
Good. Game on. All right. Griff, stick around. Who's coming on? Do you know who's coming on weekend? Fox and Friends.
It's going to be.
Do you know who's not coming on?
I don't know. Brian Kilmeade may be on. He's going to have a promo.
No.
No promo.
You will promo me.
I'll promo you.
I really hope.
That's going to be very strong. Yeah. Right. And then, you know, we like to invite Taylor Swift every week. I defend her quite a lot.
She's not
but
coming.
I don't think she's coming. Yeah. And maybe we'll get Martha Stewart. She has a new jeans ad. It's pretty
cool.
Don't
see her coming. She does have a new jeans ad.
Yeah.
Why?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Why would you put Martha in and not Sydney Sweeney again?
Well, yeah, I guess you want the really older demo, much older demo. Too old demo?
I'm leaving you hanging on that one.
Back in a moment.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
This holiday season, we're settling for nothing less than a perfect fit. There, seamless. This gift is giving. Giving generously during the holiday season is one of my greatest joys.
So what was I listening to, Allison?
Martha Stewart.
Oh, that was Martha Stewart?
I think that's her new American Eagle ad.
Thank you, Griff. Yeah, you don't know Martha Stewart's voice
I didn't hear it.
It's iconic.
I think it's a huge mistake. Do you think that she has, she served prison time.
She's an icon. I mean, she's Martha Stewart. She hangs out with Snoop Dogg and, you know.
On television. Don't fall for that. They don't hang out together. They
just
appear
they're
in a
friends.
Commercial together.
Snoop talks about her all the time. I think, look, American Eagle is on a run. And they figured, hey, listen, not everybody appeals to Sydney Sweeney, although most in the male category do, but I think they were thinking, you know what, we need a little, Americana, a little bit of tradition. It's a Thanksgiving holiday time. So Martha Stewart said, yeah, I'll do it.
I guess so. I guess that's the way it's going to be. But I'm just, I don't really think about jeans, but I think they would be very courageous of her to come back with the same thing. Okay, I have good jeans. right? Whatever she said, but instead she just does a normal ad, right?
Yeah.
That would have been a little provocative. So now to the important stuff. The President of the United States comes out and says, you know what? I think it's time to do another Rush Hour sequel, Rush Hour 4. And it turns out the next day, Paramount announced a sequel to Rush Hour 3, which people say will be 4. So they decide to distribute it. Now, Brett Ratner, who directed the first three before his career was derailed because of Me Too allegations, is returning to direct the fourth one. Do you think it's because the filmmaker has gotten close to the first family when he produced Melania, the documentary, which aired on Amazon and paid her $40 million? Do you see a link to this? You're an investigative reporter by trade.
Just purely guessing? Absolutely. And can I just tell you, who isn't happy about Rush Hour 4? I'm here for that.
Right. You have Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker, who are Mark Ratner's first feature film since 2014's Dwayne Johnson Hercules. He was Hercules?
I guess.
All right. So that's good news. How about the remake of Rocky IV? Did you hear about that?
Let's do it.
The director's cut of Rocky IV. So they're redoing it.
Good. I love all of the remakes from when we were younger. Bring them on. And Jackie Chan, by the way, going back to Rush Hour 4, I haven't seen him in anything in a long time. So I'm super excited to see him.
You watch a lot of weird stuff. Did you watch Dancing with the Stars?
I didn't watch that.
So it turns out Robert Irwin wins Dancing with the Stars, the son of
the Crocodile Hunter guy.
Yeah, what was his first name again? He was on our show a lot until he was tragically Steve killed Irwin. By a stingray, Steve Irwin. So Robert wins the dancing competition. Evidently, people bet on this, and he was the odds-on favorite.
Yeah, I've never bet on it, but I do, like on Thanksgiving, I'll be on FanDuel watching some NFL games.
Alone.
And I've seen, you can go on FanDuel and bet on that.
You're
going to
be alone,
on,
alone on Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah. I'll survive, though.
We'll see. Conor McGregor says he underwent psychoactive drug procedure because of TBI, traumatic brain injury. Oh. He has some PTSD. So he's undergoing some psychoactive drug procedure. He's doing it in Tijuana, Mexico, under the guidance at Stanford University.
Is this the, you know, hallucinogenic stuff?
I think they're doing some type. It's whatever you can't do here. The substance plants, they use plants, ibogaine. It can be traumatic for treat TBI. So see, but if you are trying to get over traumatic brain injury, should you fight in the octagon? Because he's supposed to fight at the White House.
Yeah.
So why not wait till after the fight to cure it?
Yeah. He better take Aaron Rodgers with him.
Right.